Good afternoon, 4:30 and 64 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Arlo Barnett.
Our goal remains the same in all of our trade actions. We expect a level playing field, and we expect the United States government to enforce our trade laws.
AK Steel CEO Roger Newport says the company continues to be hurt by unfair trade from China, and no timetable was announced today to restart the Ashland blast furnace.
A man is held in Boyd County for the murder of an Ashland resident.
And the Moorhead man says he's not giving up on a dog park in the community.
In sports, the World Series opens tonight in Cleveland. The favored Cubs take on the Indians.
Bud Luke has the business news.
Partly cloudy skies tonight with lows in the lower 40s. The complete forecast is coming up after this news.
Still no good news about the future of AK Steel's Ashland blast furnace following the release today of the Ohio-based firm's third quarter performance. AK is reporting net income of almost $51 million. That's nearly $44 million more than the company earned for the same period a year ago when it claimed unfairly traded imports from China had severely impaired the domestic steel market. Those imports were among the reasons AK gave for idling the local blast furnace and laying off more than 600 workers in December 2015. AK's chief executive officer, Roger Newport, says tariffs imposed on China since then have made a difference. But now the Asian country is rerouting its steel through Vietnam in an attempt to avoid the duties.
We believe that after the Commerce Department imposed duties on these imports, Chinese producers began to divert material through Vietnam prior to exporting the product to the United States in an attempt to evade the duties. Imports of these products from China have declined dramatically in response to commerce's imposition of duties, while imports of similar products from Vietnam surged.
Newport says AK's better performance during the last 3 months is owing partly to cost reductions associated with the idling of the Ashland blast furnace, improved carbon steel market prices, and lower raw material costs.
AK Steel needs to tell its former employees whether or not their jobs are coming back. That's according to the president of United Steelworkers Local 1865. Mike Howard says union members who were laid off last December will return to their positions if AK decides to rekindle the Ashland Works, but until then, they're stuck in limbo.
Most of the employers around here will not hire one of our our members, because they know that if AK does fire up, that they will, they'll go back to work. So, and that's hurting our members a bunch. And that's kind of what I'm forcing is we need an answer one way or another, whether they're going to plan on running us or they plan on shutting us down. And we've got another 160 plus people getting ready to lose benefits at the end of December, which will lose insurance.
Howard says it might be difficult to reopen the blast furnace at this point. Many USW members have moved on because they're unwilling to hold out for their old jobs without assurance from AK. Nearly 300 members have been in school since last year, training for new work with help from union-secured trade readjustment allowances.
A man is held in the Boyd County Detention Center this afternoon following his arrest in the shooting death of an Ashland resident. WSAZ is reporting that Jacob Lane is charged with murder in the killing of Justin Reeder. The victim's body was found Monday afternoon in Lawrence County, Ohio. Ashland police say Reeder had been shot in the head. The victim had been missing since October the 17th. Police already had Lane in custody. He had been arrested for breaking into Reeder's home October 21st.
The Greenup County Sheriff's Office has run afoul of the Kentucky Auditor's Office. MSPR's Tilden Johnson has the story.
The Ashland Daily Independent reports that after an audit by State Auditor Mike Harmon on the Greenup Sheriff's Office, it was found that Sheriff Keith Cooper had over $17,000 in disallowed disbursements from his special enforcement account because of a lack of documentation. On top of that, Cooper had more than $4,300 of disbursements from his 2014 fee account that were deemed as being unauthorized. Harmon says Cooper also spent $114 for unnecessary newspaper ads and did not properly document over $4,200 in credit card purchases and hotel stays. Harmon has recommended the sheriff deposit $17,000 in personal funds in the special enforcement account and make sure that all deposits and spending practices are properly accounted for in the future. For Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Tilden Johnson.
Attorney General Andy Beshear and his office have announced that an Elliott County woman has been sentenced on felony charges of Medicaid fraud. MSPR's Nathan Gutierrez has more.
56-year-old Ruby Fraley of Isonville was convicted earlier this month in Elliott County Circuit Court on two counts of Medicaid fraud. She was sentenced this week to 1 year behind bars on each count. Fraley was employed to manage the services of Medicaid recipients who were enrolled in a program that allows qualifying members to receive non-medical services in their homes. Fraley admitted submitting phony timesheets to the Kentucky Medicaid program for another employee while also submitting bogus timesheets, claiming that she had provided care to a Medicaid recipient. She also supposedly billed and received payment for transporting. Beshear says Fraley's actions caused a loss of more than $1,600 to the state's Medicaid program. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio News, I'm Nathan Gutierrez.
Maysville's mayor says he's had conversations with officials from Amtrak and the Federal Department of Transportation about increasing passenger rail service to his city. Mayor David Cartmell says the Cardinal currently makes 3 stops a week in Maysville, but he's asking them to make that happen Sunday through Saturday.
Well, I think ridership would go up dramatically if people knew that a train was coming here every day and they knew what time it was, and it was on time. And I think right now the way the system is, that is a potential.
With rail ridership up nationwide, Cartmell says he's received positive responses to his proposal. Amtrak's Cardinal line starts in Chicago and runs down to Cincinnati, across through Maysville, then on to Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia, before ending up in Boston.
The head of the Kentucky Alcohol Beverage Control Commission says more small farms could decide to start wineries as a result of a bill approved earlier this year by the state legislature. Christy Trout says small farms have now been permitted to double their annual production capacity.
This is an area that hasn't really been particularly strong in Kentucky. However, with Senate Bill 11, we've increased the maximum production cap to 100,000 gallons per year. And more importantly, we've allowed a small farm winery to provide custom crushing services.
Trout says the new law allows small wineries to have their grapes crushed elsewhere. She says the option should enable them to produce more wine without investing in that machinery.
There should be programs for Kentucky dental students to encourage them to practice in rural areas after they graduate. That's the view of State Senator Reggie Thomas. The Fayette County Democrat says tuition waivers or loan forgiveness might be among such incentives.
We have to do something in this state to incentivize dentists to get out there, you know, in Letcher County, or to get out there in Lewis County, or to get out there in Webster County.
Thomas says improving access should also result in better dental health in rural Kentucky.
The monthly distribution of food stamps is contributing to obesity among poor Kentuckians. That's the view of State Senator Jimmy Higdon of Marion County. The Republican lawmaker spent his career in the grocery business. He says he noticed what families bought with their food stamps, and the contents of their shopping carts depended a lot on what they could make last for 30 days.
Most families spent the entire allotment on that one trip to the grocery store. So I saw what they bought. And a typical family budgeting their food would buy 4 cases of Mountain Dew, 4 bags of potatoes, 4 cases of corn, 4 cases of peas, and 1 gallon of milk. They'd have milk in the house for a week. And the rest of the month, they didn't have any fresh fruits and vegetables.
Higdon argues that multiple distributions of food stamp benefits would alter consumer behavior and result in healthier food choices.
6th District Congressional hopefuls Andy Barr and Nancy Jo Kemper uncovered little common ground in a televised matchup on KET last night. The contenders took aim at each other's positions on banking regulation, Guantanamo Bay, and the Affordable Care Act. But it was a question on the minimum wage that prompted a testy exchange.
The minimum wage job is a stepping stone. It's most of the people on the minimum wage are teenagers. It's an internship where they're acquiring skills.
No, most Congressman. Most of the people on minimum wage are working single moms, and I've been there. I know what that's about.
Barr kept his focus on the Republican agenda, arguing President Obama has diminished the country's military readiness, emboldened enemies abroad, and slowed economic growth. Meanwhile, Kemper stuck largely to domestic issues like improving federal health reforms and reining in corporations. With 2 weeks remaining before the election, both candidates have just one more scheduled joint appearance on the calendar. That's a forum in Winchester this Thursday.
Despite a 2014 overhaul of Kentucky's juvenile justice system, the Annie E. Casey Foundation says those facilities don't work and need to be closed and replaced with a better model. The foundation did a study that it says indicates that youth prisons damage youngsters and are costly for taxpayers. Justice Cabinet Secretary John Tilley, one of the architects of the overhaul, agrees with that report. Tilley says while detaining kids is sometimes necessary, they're often jailed on small charges that don't warrant time behind bars.
We're not detaining the kids that can be handled in the community. That's the big victory here. We've got children who have gun charges and more serious crimes that are serving detention time. And to the extent we can move those kids to better solutions, we'll look toward that as well.
Kentucky has 10 regional youth prisons. Tilley agrees with the national report that says there is a 70 to 80% range of recidivism rates for those who are placed in those facilities. We'll have more on this story coming up on our feature report in just a few minutes.
While gender is rarely a factor when the U.S. Supreme Court renders a decision, one of its three female justices says it's still important to the country. Justice Elena Kagan spoke Monday at the University of Louisville. She says children from all backgrounds should be able to look at the high court's membership and see themselves.
It's good for the girls. It's good for the boys, too, that they look up there and that they see women performing this role and this function in our democracy. And so that's why I think it matters, and that's why I think demographic diversity of various kinds matters on the court.
Justice Kagan says she often differed with the late Justice Antonin Scalia on matters before the court, but says he was a friend and once taught her how to fire a gun.
A Moorhead man wants city council to designate a section of Rodburn Park as a dog park. Brian Mason lives on Rodburn Hollow Road, and he presented the idea to council earlier this month. Mason thinks such a facility would benefit the whole community.
Any park you have in a community increases the livability of that city or community. Dog parks actually have, in other cities, increased property values. You know, if you have a dog park, you'll have individuals that may want to move to this area because they're canine lovers and they have an activity for their dogs as well as themselves. So they want to buy in the area or rent in the area.
Mason's proposal was rejected by City Council after Parks and Recreation Director David Morris said the area is being used. Mason says he's not asking for all of Rodburn to be converted to a dog park, just a part of it that would be fenced in and water would be available. He says he'll submit a revised plan to city officials.
Renovations at Rowan County's old jail are moving into their next phase. The project is being overseen by the Rowan County Historical Society. Gary Lewis is the spokesman for the group. According to Lewis, the outside of the 1930s era structure has been cleaned and some painting has been done on the inside. He says the next step is to upgrade the building's wiring and electrical system.
We've got enough funds on hand to complete the electrical estimate, and it's somewhere in the $7,000 to $8,000 range to complete that part. But this to prepare, you know, for the use as part of the arts center.
After the electrical system is improved, Lewis says the group wants to install a new heating and cooling system in the old jail next year. The facility will be eventually used by artists who specialize in the so-called dirty arts. That's pottery, sculpture, and metalworks.
Calling it a key public safety matter, Rowan Judge Executive Walter Blevin says the county would be willing to discuss helping the city of Moorhead buy a new ladder truck for its fire department. Blevins points out the ladder truck is not only used to save lives inside the city, but also around the county and on the campuses of Moorhead State University and St. Clair Regional Medical Center.
If you're going to protect the people that are living in those dorms and protect the hospital as well, many other, mainly those two buildings or those two facilities are the ones that probably benefit the most from it. But again, I'm hired to be the judge, and it's not for the county, but for the whole county and the city, and I'm willing to try to do our fair part.
Moorhead Fire Chief Jeff Anderson has had his applications for grants of nearly $1 million from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security repeatedly rejected. The money would have to be used to purchase a new ladder truck. The department's current ladder truck is over 30 years old, and Anderson says it's become too costly to maintain.
Turning now to look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening region. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, patchy valley fog, and frost late. There will actually be a frost advisory in effect from 1 a.m. tonight until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Tomorrow, it'll be mostly sunny during the day, reaching around 72 degrees. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms with lows in the mid-50s. On Thursday, it'll be mostly cloudy, a 30% chance of rain with highs around 68. That night, partly cloudy, more valley fog and lows in the lower 40s. And on Friday, at the end of our week, it'll be sunny with highs in the mid-60s. It's currently sitting at 61 degrees in Ashland, 62 right now in Flemingsburg, as well as in Inez, 65 in Lexington and in Winchester, and it's 64 degrees here in Moorhead.
4:46, you are listening to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. It's good to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. On our feature segment, a new report finds that juvenile justice reform has led to fewer Kentucky kids being incarcerated in youth prisons. The Kentucky News Connection's Greg Stottlemyer has the story.
Kentucky Justice Secretary John Tilley says putting kids in a prison cell is not the answer most of the time. He says he agrees with a new report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, which makes the case for closing youth prisons across the country because they don't work. As a state representative, Tilley was one of the architects of Kentucky's overhaul of its juvenile justice system in 2014. He says the state has safely reduced its youth prison population nearly in half by focusing on community services.
That is making sure that every youth that can be handled safely and appropriately in the community was getting that kind of treatment. And it's best for the kid, it's best for the family, it's best for the taxpayer. It is a win on all fronts.
Kentucky has 10 regional youth prisons known as youth development centers. Tilley agrees with the national report, which shows that incarceration damages kids and recidivism rates range from 70% to 80%. Annie E. Casey Foundation President Patrick McCarthy says that leads to all kinds of problems.
You'll see high rates of unemployment, high rates of mental health problems and substance abuse problems, high rates of continued criminality, failure to form families going forward. These institutions have absolutely horrible track records in turning young people's lives around.
Tilley says while detention is sometimes warranted, Kentucky has stopped incarcerating youths for small technical violations and many nonviolent offenses.
We're not detaining the kids that can be handled in the community. That's the big victory here. We've got children who have gun charges and more serious crimes that are serving detention time. And to the extent we can move those kids to better solutions, we'll look toward that as well.
The report shows that violent, abusive conditions were clearly documented after 1990 in Kentucky's youth prisons, but not since 2000. Tilley says in the year he's been Justice Secretary,
we've very much focused on weeding out some who were neglectful in our system. We didn't see any outright abuse, and if we had, we would have dealt with it harshly.
I'm Greg Stottlemyer reporting for Kentucky News Connection.
It is 4:49. You are listening to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. All things considered from NPR is coming your way at 5 o'clock this afternoon, and Braxton has sports. He's up right now.
Good afternoon with Moorhead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Braxton Howard. Game 1 of the World Series is set for tonight at 8 o'clock in Cleveland as the Indians entertain the Chicago Cubs. Manager Joe Maddon says while his players are well aware that a Cubs team hasn't won a world championship since 1908, they're focused on the present, not the past.
We all have a tremendous amount of respect for history. You know, you go in that room right now, they're very young, really not impacted by a lot of the lore, I don't think, and other than the fact that we are impacted by our city and our fans and the people that attend our games and the conversations that we have. Absolutely an impactful moment.
19-game winner John Lester opens on the mound for Madden's Cubs. Cleveland will counter with former Cy Young Award winner Corey Kluber. Moorhead native Sam Hoabrook is a member of the World Series umpiring crew. The Moorhead State baseball team starts its annual Fall Banana Split World Series at Allen Field tomorrow. Coach Mike McGuire says the best of five inter-squad event is a fun way for his players to cap off fall practice.
It is. You know, we hold a draft, and each of my assistants takes a team, and, you know, there's a lot of fun, and a lot of trash talking, that kind of stuff with involved with that. And it's the closest we can come to simulating a spring-like atmosphere with a game, and the guys really get into it.
The losers of the Banana Split World Series have to make banana splits for the winners. The event is scheduled to run through this weekend. Moorhead State's Trevor Jones has been named the PFL's Offensive Player of the Week and has earned honorable mentions as the National Offensive Player of the Week from Stats LLC. The redshirt freshman rushed for a school-record 284 yards and scored four touchdowns in MSU's 61-49 defeat last weekend to Jacksonville. Jones impressed Coach Rob Tenier, who says the player's numbers could have actually been even better.
Heck of a performance. He had some nice runs. Felt like, you know, I wish we would have been in a position to utilize him a little more in the second half, but here we were again trying to play catch-up about midway through the third quarter for the rest of the game, and had to throw the football too much.
The football Eagles have this weekend off. They return to action on November the 5th at Butler. It's back to work for the Kentucky football team after its dramatic last-second 40-38 victory last Saturday against Mississippi State. Talking Monday to reporters, Coach Mark Stoops says he remains proud of the UK coaches and players for their efforts in the win.
Wasn't always perfect. One wasn't always as clean as we want it to be, but we're certainly getting better in a lot of areas. And most importantly, we're getting better in toughness and grit and finding ways to win. So pleased with the outcome.
The 4-3 Wildcats visit Missouri on Saturday. After his team earned a playoff berth last Friday night with a 13-12 win against East Carter, Round County football coach Gene Peterson suffered a mild heart attack. Peterson was released from the hospital yesterday, and with no game this Friday, he says he and his team are taking some much-needed time off this week.
This week we were taking off anyway. I'd already planned this week. We were going to take off today and then have short practices Wednesday and Thursday. You go 10 straight weeks, you just kind of lose, you know, you just got to get some fresh legs underneath of you, and that's kind of what our kids need right now.
Round plays Bourbon County next week in the Class 4A playoffs opening round. Moorhead State basketball coach Sean Woods says things are starting to come together for his team. According to Woods, most of the things that he had hoped would fall into place for the Eagles during preseason practices have done so.
The question that I have still is, you know, is our inside present, our five spot. And those guys are getting better every day. And if they continue to compete where they're doing, you know, I'm starting to feel a little bit better about that situation with Rashad Williams, Tyquan Benton, and the young fella from Chicago, Alonzo Chapman. So, you know, you just got to continue to stay the course.
The MSU men's basketball team will be at Johnson Arena Thursday night at 6:30 for a public Blue Goat inter-squad scrimmage. The 2016 NBA season tips off tonight. In the season opener, the New York Knicks visit Cleveland to take on the Cavaliers. With the Cavs raising its first-ever championship banner before the game and the Indians hosting the World Series next door, forward and Ohio native LeBron James calls it a memorable day for the city.
It's a special day, you know, for our fans, you know, in Cleveland and Northeast Ohio to be able to live and enjoy. They get an opportunity to just remember this day, us receiving our rings and our Indians being able to host game one of the World Series. So it's a day that will go down in history. You know, for anyone that lives here, they will never forget it. So, you know, I'm happy I'm a part of it.
The other games on the slate for opening night, the Utah Jazz visit Portland, and the San Antonio Spurs take on the Golden State Warriors. And finally in sports, the Moorhead State volleyball team is preparing to host Dayton tomorrow night at 6. The Flyers are 22-1 this season and have won 11 straight matches. Coach Jamie Gordon says facing them will present his Eagles with a great opportunity as they prepare to get back into OVC play.
Getting to host such a strong team, they've got a great tradition of excellence up there. Ultimately, what our goal is to approach that game as an opportunity to get better going into next weekend. Because ultimately, this is a really tight race within the OVC standings, and we've got a couple more home matches that we want to try and take advantage of and hopefully finish strong at the end of the month.
MSU has a 9-14 record and is coming off of a conference win against Southeast Missouri. That's it for sports for Morehead State Public Radio. I'm Braxton Howard.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Eagle Volleyball will host Dayton at 6 p.m. tomorrow night, Tennessee State at 7 p.m. on Friday, and Jacksonville State at 2 p.m. Saturday. Tickets and additional information available from the Morehead State Athletic Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. stocks closed lower as one of the busiest days of the earnings season got underway, while oil prices slipped, and the Dow Industrials did finish with a loss of 53.76 at 18,169.27. The S&P 500 was down 8.17 at 2143.16, and the NASDAQ Composite was down 26.43 at 5283.4. New York Stock Exchange breadth was roughly 3-2 in favor of losing stocks over winners. Dow Components 3M, Caterpillar, and DuPont reported earnings before the bell. Caterpillar and 3M posted mixed results as both beat estimates in terms of earnings per share but missed on revenues. Caterpillar also lowered its 2016 earnings per share guidance. DuPont, on the other hand, beat estimates on both revenue and earnings. Caterpillar was down almost 2%, while 3M was down almost 3%, and DuPont finished down almost or roughly 0.7%. And U.S. crude for December delivery fell 56 cents, or just over 1%, to settle at $49.96 per barrel, this ahead of weekly inventory data, and as verbal squabbles between OPEC members created uncertainty about a potential output cut. In economic news, consumer confidence hit 98.6, with economists polled preceding this report expecting this number to be 101.5. Meanwhile, U.S. home prices rose slightly in August from July, while the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20 City Composite Index gained 5.1% year-over-year. Overseas European stocks fell, with the Pan-European Stoxx 600 Index falling 0.35%. In Asia, stocks closed mixed, with the Nikkei 225 gaining 0.75% and the Korean Kospi falling about 0.5%. In the gold markets today, gold for December delivery rose almost $10 an ounce, finishing at $1,273.60. Among Dow stocks, your best performers were Procter & Gamble and Merck, and your worst performers were Home Depot and 3M. In the S&P 500, your best performers were Lockheed Martin and KeyCorp, and your worst performers were Nielsen Holdings and Under Armour. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Incorporated down $1.79 at $111.32, CSX up 44 cents at $30.85, AK Steel up 7 cents at $5.26, AEP up 44 cents at $63.47, Marathon Petroleum down 8 cents at $43.70, and Valvoline was down 31 cents to finish at $21.04. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Turning once again to look at the weather forecast, tonight partly cloudy skies with patchy valley fog and frost late. There is in fact a frost advisory in effect from 1 a.m. tonight to 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Tomorrow, after the fog and frost early, we'll see highs around 72 degrees and mostly sunny skies. Tomorrow night, it'll be mostly cloudy, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms with lows in the mid-50s. On Thursday, it'll be mostly cloudy, a 30% chance of rain, highs around 68. That night, partly cloudy with more valley fog and lows in the lower 40s. On Friday, at the end of our work week, it'll be sunny with highs in the mid-60s. That night, mostly clear with lows around 50. And on Saturday, sunny skies, highs around 75. It is currently sitting at 64 degrees here in Morehead.
And that does it for us on Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Chuck Moraz, Nathan Gutierrez, Braxton Howard, Courtney Howell, Sean Delaney, Jacob Lindberg, Xavier Atkins. Chaz Jenkins and Tilden Johnson from the Kentucky News Connection, Greg Stonewyer. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, and translator W202 BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Arlo Barnett and all of the MSBR News team, I'm Dan Conte, Morehead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is next. It's 5 o'clock.